If you have your Bible, let me get you to turn to Matthew 13. Matthew 13. Can you believe it's been 10 weeks since we began this? 10 weeks of parables. And so tonight we're going to look at the parable of the wheat, the parable of the wheat and tares. And it's probably, in my mind, it's the easiest parable. If there's an easier parable, I don't think it could be easier. I'm telling you, some of the parables are kind of a little hard to understand. There's some difficult ones. We'll get to those as well. But this one tonight is pretty easy. You say, well, why do you say it's easy? Because Jesus gave us the key to it. Now, if you're coming to my house and my doors are locked, you could get in if you didn't have a key. Now, you might have to knock a window out. You might have to go get a ladder and crawl in a window. You might have a strong enough leg that you could kick the door down, maybe. But if you had a key, it would be just kind of easy. Just put it in there, do the deadbolt, do the handle, and because you got a key, you could go in. Well, this parable is like that. I was reading today, and in New Jersey, there is a lady that is running for governor. And she has been in the Navy, and she went to the Naval Academy, and she said that she was involved in some type of, and she didn't use the word scandal, but basically it was where there was a bunch of the cadets, I guess they would be called, maybe wrong about that, but they had the people at this school. And it was, one of the mottos was always honest. In other words, it was just, you always tell the truth no matter what. Well, there was a bunch of them that cheated on an engineering exam. 24 of them got bounced. The other ones had to have remediation. And she's changed her story 2 or 3 times. But the whole gist was that somehow the people in her class, and she won't release her stuff to say if she was a part of it or not, but the ones that were cheating, somehow they got their hands on the key test sheet. So whatever the questions were, they had the key, which was an answer sheet for those questions, and they were able to write those things down. And she said when she answered it, she did not know that it was cheating. She didn't know about that. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, you know, I mean, I haven't cheated much, but I have every once in a while glanced at somebody else's paper when I was in elementary school, and it's like, because that's the smart kid, and I'm not. Well, if you're ever asked, did you do that, the best thing to do is say, yeah, and fess up on it. I saw a skit one time about 300 people, and this guy got there late, and it was, we're not taking any exams after the bell rings. Well, this guy, he's still writing furiously. When he comes up to hand the professor, and he's got all these stacks there, he goes, here it is. And he goes, I'm sorry, but you're late. You didn't turn it in on time. And he said, you're not going to take my exam? And he said, no. He said, do you know who I am? And the professor goes, no. The guy goes, good. He grabs those things, stuck it in there, and threw them up in the air and took off running. Well, this is a key to Matthew 13 and the parable, basically, of the tares, all right? And so I want us to see just 3 quick things tonight. We're going to begin in verse 24. It goes through verse 30, but then the key is in verse 36 through verse 43. And so I will refer to the key every once in a while. And we're going to just see 3 quick things tonight, and we'll be done. First of all, I want you to begin with me in verse 24. And it says, another parable. Now, we talked about one last week, which was the first one. And now there's another parable he put forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. Verse 26, but when the blade or the plant came up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? Verse 28, and he said unto them, An enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? Verse 29, but he said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. And verse 30 says, Let both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, and gather the wheat into my barn. So the first thing that we see is we see the sower. Now we know that he was a good man. He's sowing good seed. He's not trying to have anything that is not of good quality. We know that because we read about him in verse 36 and verse 37, which is the key passages. The key, like opening a lock key, all right? Now, I told you last week that once they rejected Christ, what did he do? He began to speak to them in parables. Why is that? Because they had rejected the miracles that he has done. And so he said, I'm going to tell them things, but they will not understand it. And so the only people that have genuine discernment are those people that are believers. Those that had put their faith and instead of rejecting Christ, accepted Christ. And so we see that in verse 36. It says in verse number 36, it says, Then Jesus sent the multitude away. Now, what has the multitude heard? They've heard about a sower that's sowing good seed. They've heard about an enemy that has come and has sown tares among the wheat. They've heard about the servants and what are we supposed to do? And they've heard, let them grow together. And in the harvest, then the separation will be. That's what they've heard. Now, some of them are probably scratching their head. The disciples weren't really sure what to think of this. And so verse 36 gives us this truth that when they rejected, then all of a sudden Jesus is not going to explain anymore to them. It's only those that have faith that are going to be able to understand what the problems are and what the solutions are. So he sends the multitude away, those that have rejected his works. Went into the house. Now, the house there, in my estimation, is probably Peter's house. Most of the Sermon on the Mount and Matthew 13, I believe that probably happened probably around the Sea of Galilee. And so I'm just guessing that that house there is probably Peter. All right. And it says that his disciples came unto him. Now you say, how big was Peter's house? Well, it's okay. You can go to Capernaum and you can look at the ruins of his house. And it's, I bet you it's as big as most of this section right here. All right. Now there's a lot of dividing walls that are there and you can see all of those. But it would be plenty of rooms for people to sleep. And I think that that's probably where Jesus's headquarters was probably at that home. And so he's at the house and his disciples came unto him and said, declare unto us, the parable of the tares of the field. And so, what does he say in verse number 37? He says this, "He that soweth the good seed is the Son of Man." Now, the Son of Man is the Lord Jesus himself. So what has happened? From the time that Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, he began his public ministry. What was he doing? Well, he performed many, many miracles. Those miracles, and I think it's either 37 or 38 that he did in the Gospels, whenever you put them all together, he was showing these people that he was the Christ. He was showing them that they were looking for a Messiah. You found him. But as they were being sown that good seed and seeing everything that the Messiah would do, then all of a sudden you have the enemy of the good man / the Son of Man that comes along, and much like the birds that went along the wayside and began to pluck up the seeds that had been thrown on the wayside, so you have the enemy that is sowing these tares among the good seed. All those works that Jesus has done, all of the miracles that he has done, all of the words that he has spoken, all of those things now are being, I guess, saturated with satanic activity and accusations and all types of negativity when it comes to the things of God. And so we see that he is the Son of Man. And so he commands his disciples also. Not only does Jesus go about sowing the seed, but the disciples are commanded to sow the seed. Now, give me some feedback here. What's an example of Jesus sowing the seed to maybe an individual? Anybody know what happened in John 3? Call out a name. Nicodemus. Anybody know what he who he talked to in John 4? Samaritan woman. What about John 5? I think it's blind man. What about John 11? He did a real big miracle there. Lazarus. You can go through and you can just say individual, 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 individual. Not just the Jewish people, but give me a Gentile that he did something for, and the guy had great faith because of it, because he had a daughter that was sick. Jairus, all right? So you see Jesus went all through the New Testament. We read the stories, and he did so much that was not even recorded. The Apostle John makes this statement at the end of his gospel, and he says that if everything that Jesus did had been recorded, that the books of the world would not be able to record them. Now, I don't know how many books were in the world at that time, and I don't know if that statement would be actually true today, because, I mean back in 1974, we had a special day at church, and everybody that came to church that day got a Bible that was on a piece of microfiche. If you had a powerful enough microscope, you could put that little piece of microfiche underneath a microscope, and you could read any portion of scripture that you wanted to if you moved it around to find it. But back then, when the Gospel of John is written, he said if everything that Jesus had done had been recorded, the books of the world, we're talking the Alexandrian Library. This past Sunday, when Archie preached in the morning and he's talking about, Brother Tommy needs to go to Egypt. I'm sitting there and I'm going, I don't know if I do or not. But if I do go to Egypt, which I don't think I'm going next year, I don't think being gone 2 weeks on a 10-day trip, I don't think I got that in me. But if I do go to Egypt, one of the places that I want to go to is I want to go to Alexandria. And the reason for that is because I want to learn some of the ins and outs of the great Alexandrian library. At one time, it boasted of being the greatest library in the known world. It burned And I would love to learn about that and see that firsthand with my eyes and hear maybe some guide from Egypt that would be able to speak in more details than what we can read about. And so you have the Alexandrian Library. You've got many libraries that would have been in Jerusalem at that time. There would have probably been libraries in Rome, the capital city of the empire. And so all of the things that Jesus did, sowing that good seed, and then he told his disciples to do the same thing. He said, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." You go to Luke chapter 10, and what is he doing? He's sending them out two by two. He said, when you go out, you knock on door, you go into a home, and if they let you in and they begin to talk to you, you say, "Peace be unto this home." But if you go there and they refuse you and slam the door in your face, shake the dust off your feet and leave them alone. But you are to go and you're to sow the seed. If you go down Interstate 16 towards Savannah from here, you will come to a little hole in the road called Metter, Georgia. Everything's better in Metter. That was the slogan for years. I don't know if they still have that, but it used to be everything was better in Metter. Anybody ever been by there? Anybody ever been to Savannah? You went by it, all right? If you were on Interstate 16 anyway. Well, there was a man that has been dead for years now, and his name was Michael Guido. He was the seed or the sower for the seed. And every day there would be commercials on television. Now, we didn't have but three channels in a PBS station. I mean, we had channel 2, we had channel 11, and we had channel 17 when we really got uptown, because then you could get over to not VHF but UHF, all right? And so we had three channels. But at night, you would see this, a word from the sower, Michael Guido. And you will see his sign on Interstate 16 going towards Savannah. It'll be the home of Michael Guido's offices. And he's been dead, I know, for 40 years. And so, but his whole ministry was sowing the seed. And I'm telling you, that guy had a reputation in Savannah on those TV programs. I mean, people always knew who Michael Guido was. And so he commands us. And so what does the sowing take place? Well, what did we learn about the sower last week? It was all the time, all types of soil. You had the wayside, you had the stony, you had the thorny, and you had the good. You had all of those, but you just sow it everywhere. We have a gentleman in our church, and he loves giving out tracts. He puts tracts in his bills that he sends out to people, whether it's utility or a doctor's office, he puts a tract in them. If you go down to Ingalls Grocery Store down here and you go to the men's room, it's a very common thing to see our tracts in the bathrooms. Now, I'm not thrilled about leaving them on the urinals, but there's tracks there, like on the lavatories and up on the soap dispensers and on the hand dryers. And I even had somebody call me from there one time. "Would you tell whoever this is to quit?" And I didn't know who it was at the time. And I know now, and they haven't called me back. And so, you know, hey, they're still getting tracks. But he's putting them tracks out right and left. And I think that's good. You never know when somebody is going to read a tract and all of a sudden the Spirit of God is going to convict them and they go, I need that. Well, need to hurry. Number two, I want you to see not just the sower, but I want you to see the sabotage. Well, if you look with me at verse 25, it says this, "But while men slept, his enemy came." So there was a group of servants that he had. I don't fault these men. Everybody's got to sleep. I mean, if you're tired, get you a nap. Go to sleep, get a good night's sleep. You don't have to be up 24/7. I used to hear preachers preach, "Bless God, I haven't taken a vacation in 10 years. And I'm thinking, that's nuts. I mean, everybody needs to have a rest every once in a while. And I guess I learned this really good because I guess 40 plus years ago, Chuck Swindoll was kind of in his heyday, and he had a little pamphlet that I saw at one of the bookstores. Those things have gone the way of the dodo bird, not many bookstores anymore. But I was looking at the one that was over on Lawrenceville Highway in Tucker, and there was a little booklet that he had written, and it was on leisure. And he went through the scripture and talked about how that sometimes you just need to take a break. You need to get some rest. It lets you get mentally sharp again. And so you have these men, and they're sleeping, and I don't really see anything wrong with that, even though we're supposed to be vigilant. We're supposed to be aware. So if I'm sleeping, you can't. And if you're sleeping, I can't. So we've got to always be watching. Maybe we take a first watch or a second watch or a third watch, but we're observant about what's going on. But there's nothing wrong with getting some rest. And it says, and the enemy came. Now, who is the enemy? Well, if you look back over at our key, I think that you will see that. If you look back, let me get my glasses on, and I'll tell you what verse it is. Verse 39, all right? The enemy that sowed them, the tares, is the devil. So there's no ambiguity about it. I mean, we know that it's Satan that is causing the trouble. And so when we see that, I want you to look with me at 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 11. I'll give you a second to get there because this is something that every one of us better be aware of. We better be careful lest Satan should get an advantage of us. Now, all of us at some time or another have had somebody that's taken advantage of us. Every one of us. But I'm telling you, I would rather be taken advantage of by somebody than by the devil. Because somebody may be doing it, and maybe they're not trying to kill you. They may be just trying to hoodoo you a little bit. But when Satan comes against us, he's trying to do harm. Did Peter not tell us that be careful that Satan as a roaring lion walketh about seeking whom he may devour? He absolutely did. We talked about that. I don't know if it was last Sunday night or the Sunday before. And so, lest Satan should get an advantage, for this is it. We are not ignorant of his devices. The word devices there doesn't mean that he's got a VCR. It does not mean that he's got an iPad. The devices there is a word that means schemes. In other words, he is always scheming. How can I get one of God's people to fall? How can I destroy this person's life? How can I do this, cause a problem? No doubt in my mind right now, he is working overtime trying to see how he can destroy the peace that has broken out between Israel and the Palestinians right now. I don't know if this is going to hold or not. My guess is probably not. Because when you're dealing with Satanism and satanic power, it's always coming against anything that's good. And so you have him, and he is always, always trying to stir up trouble. Yesterday, saw a video that came across my feed on YouTube. And it said this: Catholics are the only people that are saved, no Protestants. And I'm thinking, I think they got that backward. You've got Protestants that believe in sola scriptura. We don't believe that, you know, we've got an infallible pope. First of all, we don't have a pope. Now, I used to kid Brother Don and tell him, I said, Brother Don, you know you're the Pope of Georgia. And he'd say, you don't know what you're talking about. I said, I can prove it. And we would be going to some preacher's meeting somewhere. And I said, now when we walk in, this is what they're going to do. I'm going to look and I'm going to see people go, there's Brother Don. There's Don Richards right there. And I said, the next thing they're going to do is they're going to say, Brother Richards, would you come up here and open up this meeting in prayer? Now, they wouldn't have known he was even coming. But when they saw him, they would do that, and he would look at me and I'd say, "You're the Pope. You're the Pope." Well, we don't have a Pope, but if we did, it'd be him. Now, when I see that, I'm thinking, satanic device, a scheme. That's what I'm seeing. Now, I gave you a readout. I want you to look at this. This came out in 1965. So this year, it's 25. 60 years ago is when this hit the radio. Paul Harvey would do the rest of the story. I can still hear that guy's voice in my brain, all right? He put this out in 1965, if he were the devil. If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I would want to engulf the whole world in darkness. Now see if this guy's not prophetic. And I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. He's talking to the people in the state, United States. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. Whisper to you as I whispered to Eve, do as you please. Man, does that not sound like Christianity today? Just do whatever you want to. You got liberty. To the young, I would whisper, the Bible is a myth. Is that not what they're told every time they walk into a university? Almost constantly. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. Don't you hear people say things like, well, God is just a construct of weak people's minds? I would confide that what is bad is good and what is good is square. That was back during the hippie times. Man, you just square, all right? And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father which art in Washington. Do old people not look to Washington to always take care of them, bail them out? And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors about how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. And if I were the devil, I'd soon have families that war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with its promises of higher ratings, I would have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. And if I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon, I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I would make symbols of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. And if I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who want until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what do you bet I could get the whole states to promote gambling as a way to get rich? I would caution against the extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, and that what you see on the television is the way to be. And thus, I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Is that not accurate? That is right on the money. And so we know that the sabotage is that it's Satan that has sown. Now look at verse 26 through verse 30, and we'll be done. I want you to see the third thing, the scrutiny. The scrutiny. We have the sower, the sabotage, and now the scrutiny. Verse 26. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. Now, one of the things that when you would put a seed that was a kernel or a wheat seed, a kernel of wheat, next to a kernel of tares, to the untrained eye, unless you were an expert, and even experts would have been fooled sometime, you could not tell the difference in those seeds. Now, it's fall, and if you want to grow some fall crops, you can grow things like collards, turnips, rutabagas, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, lettuce, carrots. Those are things that you can grow now. But let me tell you something. You can look at some of those seeds, and if it didn't have the name on the package, you would never know what it is. If you took out of a package and held turnip seeds and mustard seeds in your hand, I could not tell you the difference. Not a bit. They are little bitty dark seeds, and I couldn't tell you if it was turnips or if it was mustard. I could not do it. You could throw collards in. I couldn't tell about that. Now I can tell you what a carrot looks like because it's a whole different color and a whole different shape. But some of those things are exactly the same to the untrained eye. The tares, the Greek word for it is called darnel. The darnel and the wheat look exactly alike. Not only does it look alike in its seed form, but when it pops the ground, they look alike. Now, these servants that had slept, they had no idea what had taken place. And so as they are sleeping and then they wake up and the few days pass and, you know, and maybe they've got some rains during the rainy season, and then all of a sudden these plants have popped. And then as it begins to get a little bit, all of a sudden the trained eye can go, that's wrong. This is one plant. This is another one. This one's good. This one's trouble. So they go and they ask the man that owns the field, did you not plant good seed? And they go, we thought you planted good seed. And he goes, I did plant good seed. And there's tares. And he says, an enemy has done this. And so, what do you want us to do? Should we go and pluck it up? And the man says, no, don't do that. He said, even though an enemy has done that, I want you to look with me at verse number 30. He says, let both grow together until the harvest. Now, they would have liked to have gone and yanked it out, but the problem was the wheat had a very shallow root, and if you pull the tares up, it would pull the wheat up. And so the wise move that the man gave them instruction, let them grow together. And when they grow together in the harvest time, that is when we will make the division. I want you to look with me. Look at verse 39. We see that the enemy that sowed them is the devil, and the harvest is the end of the world. So when the show gets shut down, there's going to be a time of judgment, and the reapers are the angels. So we don't get to read into the parable any kind of meaning. The key tells us that the good man that has sown good seed is the Son of Man. The servants are the disciples of the Lord. The enemy is Satan. And when the judgment comes, the reapers are not the servants. The reapers are the angels that are going to take these people, and literally they will be hurled into the lake of fire. That's the word that is used in Revelation 20 about the great white throne. Now, when they're growing these wheat plants and the tares are there, they're going to grow together. And as they do that, finally the harvest comes and they pull it up. And what do? They take it and the women begin to take it apart. They can look at it and they go, okay, it's mature now. I know that's a wheat, that's a tare. So they begin to separate that and they put the wheat one side, tares the other side, and it says that they are going to bundle it up, especially those tares are going to bundle. Now they've got one more step with the wheat, but they've got these darnel that they have put in bundles and they take them to the fire and they just burn them. The other day, I guess it was Friday or Saturday, we have been putting limbs and bushes that we have cut and trimmed for months. We've been putting a pile together, and it was raining, not raining, but wind was blowing a little bit, and I told Deb, I said, it's probably not a good day to burn, but we will, but we got to be careful. So what we did was we just started it one little bit, and then I just kept feeding it. And that huge pile that was probably 8-10 feet long and probably 5-6 feet wide, in about 3 hours, it was nothing but ashes. It was destroyed the same way that the tares in those bundles will be burned up. The unsaved at the end of the age are going to be cast into that lake of fire. Now, you've got the good seed that has come in. There's been a division. And so what are the ladies doing now? They're taking the wheat, but they don't take it and immediately put it in the barn. No, you have to take that to what is called a threshing floor. You remember the story of Gideon, the least in his father's house? Gideon is there, and you've got the Midianites, and every time the crop comes in for the Israelis, the Israelites, they come in with a raiding crew and just take their food. They let the Jews plant it, harvest it, and then all of a sudden they come in and take it there at the end. I heard the story about my grandfather on my dad's side, and he was a sharecropper is what he was. And he was approached by a man that had a reputation of basically cheating the sharecroppers. And the way that the story was told to me, and again, anytime you hear one side of a story, you know, you don't know, but this man would have somebody come in, and then when the crop came in, he would run the people off, and then he would collect it, but he let them do the work. And my pop was a sharecropper, and he plowed it, he planted it, he tended to it, he weeded it, he fertilized it. And then when the crop came in, the guy goes, well, we don't need you around here no more. You got to go. And they said my pop reached in his pocket and flipped out a pocket knife, flipped it open. He said, we're going to go, but we're not going till we get our crop. And the guy goes, okay. So he was able to get what he had worked for because that was the agreement. And then they left when the season was over. And when I thought about that, I thought, you know, there's a threshing that has to take place. The word, really, it's a threshing floor, but the term is called a winnowing. Not window, but winnow. Winnowing. And it's where that they would crush the kernels. Then they would put it in a sheet and they would throw it up in the air. And that's what old Gideon was doing. He's over there, he's hiding, he's looking around, letting the chaff blow away, kernels falling. He's looking to make sure nobody's around. And he keeps doing that. That's what these women are doing. Now, these women are good women. They're working hard. Now, I know that he's nuts, all right? But before church tonight, Jeff Richards sent me a note. Said, God said that man was to look to the four corners of the earth to find a perfect woman, and then he made the earth round. Okay? Well, these women are winnowing, and they get these heads of wheat, and they have the chaff that is blown away by the wind, hence the name winnowing. And then they take the seed and they put it in containers, and they go and put it in the barn. Now, the barn is it's a picture, it's a metaphor of heaven. And I don't think that I'm doing any disservice to the scripture by saying that I think that sometimes there's good kernels of wheat that already are put in the barn. Think about some of the people that we have lost. I was talking to G.W. Goodman yesterday. And G.W. said, Brother Tom, he said, in the last couple of 3 years, we have lost some good people. I said, yeah, we have. And I said, the Lord's given us some new good ones. And he said, I'm telling you, he said, I miss some of these folks. And he began to call names, and he talked about the first ones out of his mouth. He said, I miss Brother Grady and Miss Gail. I said, you're not the only one. I miss them. I mean, they were just rocks in this church for, longer than I've been here. They were here longer than Brother Don, so they would have been members of this church well over 50 years. I began to think about other people, some of the men that served on the building committee for this complex. They're with the Lord. Some of the seeds already in the barn, but the majority is going to be when the Lord comes. When I think about that, I think about heaven. And every once in a while, I'll have a flashback to my dad. I remember seeing him sitting at the old kitchen table there at the farmhouse. He'd have a cup of coffee and cigarette. Never did give up him cigarettes. He'd be sitting there, and he'd be struggling to breathe, and he'd still smoke them cigarettes. Let me tell you how crazy he was about them cigarettes. He loved them things. When they put him in the VA hospital in Dublin, they took like 30, 40 pounds of fluid off of him. And he hadn't had a cigarette in like 3 or 4 days. And he found an orderly. And he was kind of like talking to him privately. He said, you a smoker? Yeah. Tell you what I'll do. He said, I'll give you money, and if you'll go buy me a pack of cigarettes, I'll buy you one. All right, I'll do it, Mr. Foskey, I'll do it. And my dad would go outside of an exit door. This was back before everything would ring and all of that stuff. And he'd just stand there outside at the VA hospital in Dublin and smoke until he was happy. Then he'd come back inside and make like everything was perfect. But my old dad knew the Lord. He talked about the Lord. He sang gospel music. He was a faithful church member until he got his feelings hurt. And he talked about going to heaven. But if he would sit at that table, it would be so bad sometimes that his legs would swell where it would be almost like an elephant-looking leg, where it was just straight like a trunk. And the skin would begin to crack and the fluid begin to ooze. And they'd have to put towels underneath his feet so that it didn't get on the floor. And he would just hurt to breathe. He would sleep sitting up because if he laid down, he suffocated. And then he died, and I had his funeral. And I've had people say, do you wish they could come back? And when I think about what he went through, no, I don't. He's with the Lord. He's done give up that tobacco. He's doing good. Now, what is he doing? I have no idea. Maybe he's waiting on me to show up. But I know this. I know that there's seed that's already in the barn. And there's going to be more seed and more seed, but one day the barn is going to be full. The sad thing is, there's going to be more people that never made it to the barn. The angels, the reapers, are going to grab them, and they're going to be hurled into the lake of fire. All but for those of us that know the Lord. There's an old-time Christian years ago, and his name was Christian Ryland. He used to like to make this rhyme. He said, "They all shall be there, both great and small and poor, and I shall shake the hand of the blessed St. Paul." He wanted to shake Paul's hand. And my guess is by now he probably has.